And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, the politics in the state legislature in Harrisburg are continuing to be, like a Saturday soap opera, a thriller with many installments. You got to come back to the movie every Saturday to see what's the latest. The girl was left on the tracks. The locomotive is coming down the tracks. Will somebody pull her out? The House of Representatives in Pennsylvania is just like that, right?
Yeah, it's more like musical chairs. The Democrats, with who won control by one vote, 102 to 101, then had a problem because three of their people resigned to take other positions, had to wait for a election to be held, special set of elections, won all three seats back. Now the Republicans lost a seat because there was another special election and one of their own moved to the state Senate. So right now it's 102 to 100. However, the Democrats have a problem because one of their own from Delaware County has now been accused by not one but two women of sexual harassment who are demanding his resignation, which would mean the Democrats don't have a majority anymore, and it would likely be tied at 101 until at least May, when another election can be held, if that's soon now.
But another election doesn't guarantee a Democrat. I mean,
no, this is not a solidly Democratic seat as the other three were. Delaware County, up until recently, was pretty heavily Republican. But meanwhile,
where is Delaware County?
It's right outside of Philadelphia. It's borders Delaware.
Okay.
There are four counties. On the northeast, there's Bucks and Montgomery, and on the southeast, there's Chester and Delaware County around Philadelphia. So, anyhow, meanwhile, the Speaker of the House, Rossi, has fulfilled, I guess, what his pledge was to the Democratic leadership, and he has stepped aside so that Joanne McClinton, who's the leader of the Democrats in the House, could be the first African-American woman to assume the speakership.
Now, how did Rossi get to be the speaker?
Well, that's a good question. Because of the turmoil with these three Democratic seats up in the air, but knowing that the Democrats were going to have the majority, there were all sorts of backroom politics played, and the Republicans wanted to block McClinton, and they went around to a number of Democrats saying, can we work a deal? And Rossi was the only one that bit, and he supposedly was pledged that he would not caucus with the Democrats and become an independent. But the fact of the matter is, he never changed his party registration, which ticked off the Republicans. The Republican leader and I think six or seven or maybe more Republicans voted for him, and the Democrats went along with their understanding being that he would step aside when the 102 votes were solid again and McClinton would take over. Meanwhile, Rossi said, I'm not going to go anywhere until I get my bill passed on extending the statute of limitations for sexual predators of children, because he had been a victim of that. And so the state house passed the bill, and they also passed the constitutional amendment to that effect. The problem on the constitutional amendments in the state Senate is that the Republicans wanted to bundle that with two of their constitutional amendments. They haven't been able to get legislation through because there's a Democratic governor, and now there's a Democratic House. So they want to get around that by having constitutional amendments, which can't be vetoed by a Democratic governor. It just goes right to the ballot. and they wanted to have one where they could overrule the powers of the governor in certain things, and then also get a voter ID. So they've been holding out for linking the constitutional amendment on child predators to the other two, but they're not going to go anywhere with that. So meanwhile, you have all this kind of turmoil. You know, with one house being Democratic and one house being Republican, one wonders what's going to happen. But the thing is, as long as the Democrats have an agenda in the House, they can stop Republicans from doing bad things, like passing these constitutional amendment ballot measures, or these other wacky stuff that other state Republicans are doing.
Have the state Senate Republicans wanted to introduce a constitutional amendment enshrining the independent legislative theory in the state constitution?
Not that I know of. What they have tried to do is pass a constitutional amendment electing judges by district, statewide judges by district, which would always favor the Republicans in the state for the state Supreme Court.
Sure.
That's been a major thing. You know, when they lose power, they find out ways not to give up power, but to stymie Democrats from doing anything.
Well, presumably that is what the Democrats, and especially Joanne McClinton, are going to be concerned to do when they control the House.
Keep the Republicans from
doing bad things.
That's what they should be. Now, you've got to remember, the first thing that's going to come up is Josh Shapiro's budget. He's going to be introducing it, I believe, this month. Normally, it's February for a sitting governor, but now I think it's March. And quite frankly, with the two houses in different hands, it's what every budget is, DOA. And then they start, the legislature starts working from scratch and negotiating with the governor as to what they want in order to get certain things. And, when Ed Rendell was there, I don't think they ever passed a budget on time. They hated him, and they never would. They did better with Tom Wolf in charge. He was more accommodating, and he was less... Or he was more palatable to them. You know, he didn't irritate them like Ed Rendell did. So,
but on the other hand, Wolf restored a lot of money to the education budget.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the Republicans were against that tooth and nail.
Well, now they're going to be a big problem on education because the state Commonwealth Court has ruled that the funding mechanism is unconstitutional. It doesn't... treat the smaller districts as well as it treats the bigger and richer districts. So they're going to have to refund all of this in a way that can pass muster.
What if they don't?
Well, then you're going to, yeah. Well, that's going to be an interesting thing because they're going to wind up going back to court and the court's going to, you know, go back and say this ain't legal and, but there's going to be political pressures because a lot of the districts that are underfunded are in Republican areas. The rural districts are the ones that, you know, it's the suburban districts that get disproportionately more money, and they're the wealthier ones.
But there's nothing that the court can do to enforce the law.
No.
You can't arrest the legislators for not passing the right appropriation.
And I don't know if they would try to hold them in contempt. But let's see what the budget process.
Well, that's interesting. Could they do that? Could they hold them in Republican majority or any Republican who voted not to change the budget guidelines in contempt?
In Ohio, the state Supreme Court kept ruling the redistricting improper and kept sending it back to the legislature. And the legislature kept sending it back to the court that kept rejecting it. And the court would never hold them in contempt.
So it didn't matter what the court said.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. But let's see what Shapiro can do. There's a lot of he's a former state representative, so he he knows the legislative process pretty well. And we'll have to see. Meanwhile, the state Senate, by the way, there is one thing that has bipartisan support, and that is Doug Mastriano's committee that wants to hold Norfolk Southern's feet to the fire over the wreck that occurred in on the border of Ohio because it affected Pennsylvania.
How is it that Mastriano is allowed to take the lead in this if the Democrats control at least one of the houses?
Well, because they don't control the Senate, and he controls the committee in the Senate.
But they control the House. They could do a House committee.
Yeah, well, the problem is the House has been, they didn't even have rules to operate. They couldn't pass a thing or do anything until last week, in essence. So in the vacuum, politics abhors a vacuum. So in that, they acted. Huh. And so there's that. We talk about the fact that you got to stop Republicans from doing bad things. And all across the country, we're seeing these Republican legislators, despite what the voters wanted in 2022, the Republicans don't care.
No.
Okay. It's all a power trip. We do it because we can. And there's all sorts of things going on not only have bad laws, but to stymie democracy. We saw in Florida, there's a legislator who effectively wants to disband the Democratic Party.
He's introduced a bill, right?
Yes, yes.
The bill says if any party, it doesn't mention the Democrats, any party ever supported slavery, they can't continue to exist as a legal organization, right?
Yeah. Now, if the Democrats were smart, they would get up there, although Florida things are really bad for the Democrats. They just elected, by the way, a new state party chairwoman. She was the one that lost to Charlie Crist in the primary for governor. I believe her name is Freed.
Mm-hmm.
But if she was the only statewide Democrat to hold office at one point. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they're smart. They would get up and say, we want to amend the bill. We want, we don't want any legislator whose family roots go back to when, to may have held slaves or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Now it won't go through, but it would certainly throw a monkey wrench into that. But, that's Florida for you. We have, I'm trying to think, I think it's in Tennessee, where they want to have lynching as a means of capital punishment, lynching from a tree. South Carolina wants to install the death penalty for women who have abortions, but the law is written so wide, so broadly, that it may be wanting to kill women who've suffered a miscarriage. These things. And
in Texas, there's a bill to produce bigger families by giving tax abatements to bigger families. You get a certain number of kids, you get a certain an abatement. If you get up to 10 kids, you get no taxes. You don't have to pay any state taxes. But gay marriages are exempted. And any marriage in which either partner was divorced ever are exempted because the Bible condemns divorce.
Yeah, I mean, this is the theocracy of the Republican Party. But it's also one of the things, one of their themes. I'm taking a course at the University of Scranton and about conservatism. But one of the themes that's emerging is family. And the Republicans are always talking about the breakdown of the family. Well, that's why they're talking about divorce. And there's some conservatives who say that we've got part of nationalism is becoming tribal and everything starts with the family and family values. And of course, the other reason that they want to have families with large kids is to offset the immigration of brown people into the country, the Hispanic stuff. So that's one of the things that they one of the points that they're doing with that.
Do any bills like this have a chance of passing?
Yeah, they have a chance of passing. Some of them are just performance art, of course, but yeah, they have a chance of passing. And, you know, who knows? Now, the interesting thing is, you know, this week we had the Biden loan forgiveness came to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And it looks like it's dead in the water. The only thing that can save it is if the court rules that there isn't standing. And by the way, that's another thing. The people who brought this were Republican states who said that it, or state legislators who said, or state attorneys general who said, you know, this affects our state, so we have standing, even though we're not harmed by it.
But you know what their standing was and the argument they made? They claimed that they expected to take in a certain amount of money in interest. And if the loans are forgiven, they won't make that interest money. So that's how they'd be injured. Now, what a perversion.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, in the argument, Justice Gorsuch said, well, and he brings up this fairness argument. He said, well, is it fair that some people who paid their loans off or paid part of the loans off, you know, didn't get their loans forgiven or that part that they paid forgiven, and other people are getting away scot-free, so to speak? And this is, again, a recurring Republican theme there about fairness to, you know, white people, basically, behind the scenes. But
you know, there's an easy way to make it fair. Make it retroactive. Whoever paid back the loan, give him back his money.
Yeah, but the law there isn't there. But I want to get back to the fact that what we were just talking about, that if that case goes to the Supreme Court, you know, this theological case that we give people with larger families or we don't have divorced people, I'm wondering if Justice Gorsuch is going to be asking that question. Well, is it fair if people who were divorced can't get this?
Right.
I want to see that. Or I'd love to see, you know, Sonia Sotomayor ask that question. I'll ask the Gorsuch question. Is this fair?
Right.
And, you know, see what happens. So we have all this craziness that's going on.
But the thing is, it isn't crazy. This all follows directly from the Christian nationalist perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's quite logical. If you grant Christian nationalism, this is right up there.
Yeah.
This is what you should do.
Yeah. And of course, if you're non-Christian, like if you're Jewish and an office holder, they're now stalking you in Michigan. To try to kill you, literally.
Well, if it's a Christian country, what right do Jews have to run the country?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. You know, if some people say, well, the Jews will be tolerated or the Muslims will be tolerated, but you just can't do anything that the Christians could do, you know?
Well, you'd be tolerated like the Democrats in the who moved to red states after Marjorie Taylor Greene's divorce.
They can
move, but they can't vote. They have no civil rights.
Yeah, you have no civil rights, right.
Yeah.
You know, and that gets also, you know, this week there was a big kerfuffle, or the last 2 weeks there's been a big kerfuffle over Scott Adams, who's the cartoonist, who draws the Dilbert comic strip. And he's been tacking right and hard right for a while in his, not so much in his strip, although there's some of it, but in his commentary that he's making publicly. And what happened, there's this Republican-leaning poll, the Rasmussen poll, which has also tacked more to the right, that raised the question as to whether or not it's okay to be white. Now, this is according to the ADL.
What is that? What's the question?
Is it okay to be white? And the ADL has said this is a white supremacist question, trying to make white people the victims of race discrimination rather than blacks. It's a clever way to turn on it. But 43% of blacks either said no or they had a question about it. So Scott Adams gets on and said, most black people don't think it's okay to be white. Blacks are all racist. We should have nothing to do with them, in essence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, it was interesting. A lot of times you'll hear me say, and, you know, when I'm doing my lawyering, if I'm cross-examining an expert and I have the report in front of them, what I always say is, it's not what they say, it's what they don't say. What are they holding out on? You notice Rasmussen never asked people if it was okay to be black. You know, and I would be wondering what they would get kind of an answer in that. But that's not what Rasmussen wants to do. It wants to gin up the Republican base. So did Scott Adams, who, following in the Kanye or the Ye West footsteps, found all of a sudden that he's without an income base.
Good.
Newspapers all over the country, including now the Scranton Times Tribune, have dropped his strip, although it ran for a few days. Because the strips are pre-locked into the paper.
Mm-hmm.
So he's lost a lot of that income. I don't think he needs it at this point. And he still could sell books and whatever of anthologies. But we saw that kind of happening this week. And, you know, talk about black and white. We had that race in Chicago, the mayoral race, the primary, and where Mayor Lori Lightfoot, the first black female lesbian mayor of Chicago, lost her reelection bid. She came in third. And the two contenders, you have a black gentleman who's supported by the teachers union, and you have a white fellow who's supported by the police union. But he was formerly head of school districts, too. So, and of course, Lori Lightfoot said she thought she lost because she was because of racial issues.
Well, you know, Lori Lightfoot, when she won her election, her base was 17.5%. And in this election, she got 17.5%. It's not like she lost support. She just didn't gain any support.
Yeah. And, you know, Chicago's been in a mess for a while, so it's not surprising. It wasn't surprising. But we have to see how this, now the runoff, how that plays out. Because it's not just black-white, although the two candidates may not, you know, bring that issue up, but you have two unions fighting each other.
Yes, well, you got a union
public
that has a lot of members, and you got a union with very few members. But the very few member union is a very right-wing group.
Yeah, the police union. And they'll probably have the firemen's union with them.
Well, maybe,
Although I didn't hear anything. So, you know, and then speaking of unions, we should be talking about Starbucks. which, you know, Howard Schultz was the originator of Starbucks, is always looked upon as a more progressive type of leader.
Yeah, until the unions came.
Yeah. And he sort of took personal offense, saying, I don't know why my people want unions. I treat them so well, but apparently he doesn't treat them well enough. And this week, the National Labor Relations Board judge found that Starbucks had indeed violated the law pretty graphically or pretty strongly in trying to stop unionization, firing people and closing shops around the country. I mean, closing shops is the Walmart trick and the Amazon trick. On that, but you know, more Starbucks has been unionized to a much greater extent than.
Aren't there now several hundred Starbucks stores with unions in them?
I believe there are.
Yeah,
I believe there are,
and that's all within the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, slowly but surely, the unions looks like they're gaining a little bit. on that. And of course, that's one of the agendas that the Republicans want to do, is get rid of them and get rid of the public service unions. The postal, that's what Scott Walker did, hurt people very badly in Wisconsin.
And there are Republicans who want to introduce into the National Congress bills to make right-to-work laws nationwide.
Right.
So that would outlaw unions everywhere.
Yeah. Now, Joe Biden is probably the most pro-union president that we've seen since at least LBJ, if not Harry Truman and FDR. You know, I don't know whether his father ever belonged to a union, but certainly when he grew up in Scranton, Scranton was a big union town. And northeastern Pennsylvania was, you know, with the coal mines and stuff, was always a big union area.
So yeah, what do you make of Biden's decision to allow the Republican resolution that overrides District of Columbia Council, which passed a bill to lessen punishments for certain crimes and to give voting rights to non-citizens, to invalidate that? The Congress has the right to invalidate anything that the local council passes. But Biden, of course, has the right to veto what the Congress does. And so he said he won't veto it. He'll let them override
it. I think that's discretion is the better part of valor there. Don't forget, the mayor of Washington, D.C. vetoed it. She wasn't happy about it.
But the council overrode her veto 12-1.
Right. But it gets down to a crime issue. And Washington, D.C. has a crime problem like Chicago. And that's something that the Democrats feel that they are weak on. And there's a number of senators who are going to be running in 2024 along with Biden, if he runs, which I think he's going to, who don't want to be seen as weak on this and now have cover from the president. You're looking in Montana with John Tester and West Virginia with Joe Manchin, and there could be a couple of other places. So you're going to say that you'll see how many Democratic senators go along with this when the vote comes to the floor in the Senate.
Will it come to the floor?
Yeah, I think it will.
So, well, I guess it has to. I mean, if it doesn't come to the floor, then they haven't done it. They haven't overridden the council.
Right. And it's more or less a bipartisan bill not necessarily equally bipartisan, but it is bipartisan. So we have that one.
And then, of course, the Republicans continue to talk about keeping Social Security as it is, except raising the age to 70. And making the trust fund an investment fund, putting it into the stock market.
Right.
Meaning that it's not what it is at all. It's completely different.
Right. And also, raising taxes to some extent. So, those fundamentally change the nature of Social Security.
Right.
Now, the beneficiaries aren't going to care if they get more money, but people who want to retire at 67 or 65 on reduced rates.
It's already been raised, right? I retired at 65. I got Social Security. Yeah. Now I couldn't do that. I have to wait two more years.
Well,
and the fact is that
you get full benefits.
Well, that's the point. You don't get full benefits. And they say, well, the Republicans argue, well, you know, people live longer. No. All people don't live longer. Poor people don't live longer.
Right.
Rich people live longer. You're asking poor people to die sooner because they're not going to get their Social Security.
So,
wasn't there a Republican that said it was good if people died sooner?
He said it was good if children died because then they wouldn't take the benefits that they might otherwise take, and the government would save a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah. Children from broken homes and everything.
Right. Right. Poor children. Yeah. All right. That's it for today. Enough. What a litany of horrors you describe. Let's hope some of it can be stopped.
Yep. And we'll see what this coming week brings.
This coming week will bring more daylight.
Saturday night. But first, Saturday morning is the big parade, the St. Patrick's Day parade in downtown Scranton. We'll see. And so this week, our listeners are right on with the time, but next week, you know, we'll be on an hour earlier than they than they're looking for us. So
spring forward.
Spring forward. All right.
All right. Have see you next week.
Have a good week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.